And Greg Braden, our special guest tonight, will be back with Greg as we talk more about the science of miracles right here on Coast to Coast AM. Greg, during a seven-year period, you took four trips, totaling about 80-plus days to monasteries in the Tibetan Plateau. Why'd you go back so often?
We went back to experience and document the things that we had seen on each previous trip. It was interesting. There are 12 monasteries and two nunneries that we had the opportunity to explore. Some of them, George, were at elevations we had to cross over 16,500 feet above sea level to get some of the passes to get to these monasteries. And it takes a long time to acclimate our bodies and just the sheer inaccessibility of some of these places. So it takes a long time to get there. And by the time we would get to some of these places, we would just begin to understand what was there, and we had to leave. So it made sense to go back once the camaraderie was established with the monks and the nuns and the abbots. There was a trust that was created, and in that trust, they were willing to take us places and show us the libraries. Some of these libraries, George, are 1,500 years old, that have the texts that describe in written terms the practices that they are still using in these places today. And these are the practices that we went to first to see if they really exist, secondly, to document them, and third, to integrate them into what I'm sharing through our work and with our listeners tonight.
I am really fascinated with your work about some of these ancient texts that somehow have been lost from us. Let's talk about that.
Sure. Well, it's interesting. We said early in the program that there is a universal essence that connects us and everything in our world, and it is a fact that we can create experiences in our bodies, specifically in our heart. And I'm going to talk about why that's important in just a minute.
Sure.
But we can create those experiences in our heart that communicate directly with this field. Now, George, when we're talking, this sounds like science fiction stuff, but it literally allows us to interrupt the flow of space and time and rearrange the stuff our world is made of. And this is the power that we are born with in this world. It's an understanding that sounds so foreign to the Western mindset and to our way of thinking, yet it's so deeply entrenched in the indigenous, the native, as well as the ancient spiritual traditions throughout the world, including the early Christian and pre-Christian and Jewish traditions before those texts were edited or completely removed in the case of the Western Bible in the 4th century during the time of the Emperor Constantine. So one of the things that a lot of people, we hear about the biblical edits, and if anyone's read, the Da Vinci Code, I haven't. I'm probably the only person that has not read
really?
The Da Vinci Code, but I understand they talk about those edits. And a lot of people believe this happened only in the Christian Bible. The Jewish Bible, beyond the Torah, was edited as well. The Torah, the first five books of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, mm-hmm. Deuteronomy, those are intact. And the additional books that were canonized as the Jewish scripture, they were edited as well. Excuse me. We know that these texts were edited because we have found the evidence of those edits in places like the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Nag Hammadi Library, the Coptic mm-hmm. libraries, and in Cairo, we've documented those Coptic libraries, and in the libraries of these monasteries in the Egyptian mountains. We find them in South America, in Bolivia and Peru, and the monasteries there, and we find them in the best-preserved records in the highlands of central China and Tibet. And it appears, now the first time I had the opportunity to take one of these pilgrimages was 1998, and the monks that were there, they told us, they said that after the crucifixion of Jesus, that the followers were persecuted, and they fled the Holy Lands, and they went to four key locations. Now, this is a little 14-year-old monk telling me this through the translator. He's saying they went to four key locations, and in each of those locations, they carried copies of the same records, the same texts, that are essentially the equivalent of the Dead Sea Scrolls that we find today. One of those places was into the mountains of Egypt. One of those was in the what we now know as the Tibetan Plateau in China. One of those places was in the southern, right along the southern border between Bolivia and Peru, and we've seen the monasteries there. And one of those places was right here in North America, in parts of South Central North America, in areas of Kentucky and Tennessee. And believe it or not, some of those texts have actually been found and documented in those areas as well.
Well, are these texts training guides, instruction sheets? What are they?
You know, they're written in ancient Greek, Coptic, and Aramaic. And the Aramaic language, we get a lot of questions about this. The way that we can use the English alphabet and write Spanish or French words, the Aramaic alphabet, there are Hebrew letters that are used to create the Aramaic alphabet. They've been found, there are even records, I don't know, you may have heard about this, George, they found an abbreviated copy of the Ten Commandments carved in a 2,000-year-old stone on a reservation just south of Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Yes.
Both Greek and Greek and Hebrew letters. And the question is, who knew Greek and Hebrew in North America 2,000 years ago? And
exactly.
How did that get there? So these the records appear to have been from a central wisdom, a common wisdom, a lineage. And after the crucifixion, that lineage of wisdom was dispersed, and we're now finding evidence of it in different places, but they're all saying essentially the same thing. And if you were to pull all of these records together, such as the ones we find in the libraries in Tibet, and we've actually got some images of those in the DVD. I wanted to put some of those images in there so people could get an idea of what they were like. But the bottom line is they say that we're a part of our world and all that we see, and that we have the ability, if we choose, to create experiences inside of our bodies that influence the world beyond our bodies. And this is the disconnect in Western science because, of course, based on the 1887 Michelson-Morley experiment, there's no stuff that connects everything else. And from that thinking, George, there's no medium to conduct the inner experience beyond our bodies. There's nothing for it to flow through into the world around us. What our own science, and this is going to lead into this coherence project you were asking me about, what we're finding, and for listeners that would like to believe that heart-based experience of feeling and belief affects our outer world and need a reason to really grasp that concept, what our own science has found is that our heart is the strongest electrical field generator in the body, and it is the strongest magnetic field generator in the body. And the reason that's important is because our physical world hinges largely on electrical and magnetic fields, the electromagnetic spectrum that we've all heard about. And any physics textbook, you go pull out your kid's physics textbook right now, and it'll tell you that if you change the electrical field of an atom, or you change the magnetic field of the atom, you will change that atom, the way it behaves, the way it expresses itself. And there even we've even got terms, the Zeeman effect and the Stark effect are the two effects that are documented as changing the electrical and the magnetic field of the atom. And this is important because the texts say if we change either the electrical field or the magnetic field, that we can change and influence the way that atom behaves. And our heart creates both, not just one or the other, both. But this is where it gets really interesting, George. And this is why feelings in our heart are so much more powerful than thoughts in our mind. Because our own science now is telling us that our heart creates electrical fields that are 60 to 100 times stronger than the fields of our brain, the same electrical fields of our brain.
Yeah, I believe that.
And magnetic fields 5,000 times stronger from our heart than those of the brain. And that explains to us why thoughts are powerful, and they can be important in our lives, but it's much easier to heal and create peace and alter our physical reality through our hearts than it is through our thoughts. And our hearts are where we have the feelings and the beliefs that communicate with this field that connects everything. And this is what ties it all together. This is what they're teaching in those monasteries. This is the great secret that that everyone knows except us. In the indigenous traditions, right? I live in the high deserts of northern New Mexico. My wife and I live here, and we're surrounded by native traditions that that they've held these ideas for hundreds, if not thousands, of years.
Well, Greg, why is it that when the heart stops to function, you know, when a person dies, that these abilities seem to carry over?
Well, the heart is the way that we're expressing. What we know is that while we're still, science is still hard-pressed to prove the distinction between the body and the soul, they do acknowledge that there's an essence that cannot be accounted for in the physical body, our soul. And our soul is what is actually expressing through our bodies and specifically through our hearts. When the body is no longer there, what the studies show, and there are a lot of new theories about why this is happening, is that the essence, that field, continues. There are many places, George, where one topic tonight could be a whole program unto itself, and this is one of those places, but there are some really powerful, well, I'll just say it right now, I'll just tell you where some of these theories are coming from. There is a growing body of mainstream scientific evidence that suggests that we may actually be living in what is what our own scientists are calling a virtual or a simulated reality.
Like the Matrix.
Well, not quite like that, but that's where it's along those ideas. The whole idea is that through our bodies here, we're expressing something that is not here. In other words, it's called non-local, and that's a term I know that comes up a lot on this program. And in another program, I'd love to go into the studies and the details about how real this possibility may be. But to get back to your question, it appears that even when our physical body is no longer here, that the stuff that's expressing, the intelligence that's expressing through our body, continues. But the key to all this is the human heart. And the heart, in the Western way of thinking of things, has been almost completely discounted. We've become a very mental, left brain, male-dominated, schematically oriented, technologically-based society, which is good, and it's led us to the place, George, where we must embrace the rest of our power to come full circle and survive what we've created, and that's the power of the intelligence of the human heart.
Well, you know, we hear these phrases, my heart is heavy, you know, you love someone through your heart. How did that all come about?
Well, I think people, I believe those come about through people expressing the only way they know how, very non-technical terms, a very real feeling. This is where the action is. It's in what can technically be called a 7-layer liquid crystal oscillator in the center of our chest. It's not the most romantic sounding term, but that's the function our heart is playing. And it's in our heart where the thoughts in our mind are combined with the emotions of the lower energy centers in our bodies. Our listeners are familiar with the 7 or 8 energy centers, the chakras that you see on the charts.
Right, right.
The heart, it's interesting, the top three are considered communication and logic and associated with the mind. The lower three are considered to be the power of human emotion that drives us forward in life. And the two are married together. If we know the techniques and understand the technology, the two are married in the heart, and when we marry thoughts and emotions, we create what we call a feeling, and by definition now, feeling is the union of thought and emotion. When we create the right kinds of feelings, that's the word that we call for the electrical and the magnetic fields that extend beyond our bodies and literally rearrange the stuff our world is made of. And this is how science is kind of backing in to the fact that we are connected with our world, that they're seeing that the human heart literally can change the physical stuff our world is made of through these electrical and magnetic fields. And they're also finding that we are literally tuned to layers of the atmosphere of the Earth through these fields, and that's bringing us around to the Global Coherence Project that you were asking about earlier.
Now, when science gets involved in this, do they attempt to debunk it at all?
They do. And this is what's so interesting. I've worked with a lot of, you know, we talk about scientists, and there are some that would like to believe and just need a reason. There are some whose job it is to disprove everything. And I think this is how we get to the truth, George. This is how we find out what works and what doesn't, which of our spiritual traditions serve us and which of them are kind of make-believe, because there's a lot of stuff out there. But the scientist who I've worked with, some researchers in Northern California, who have documented the healing effects of healers from all over the world, such as the ones we spoke about earlier in China. And while the effects are there, there's such a disconnect in our way of thinking, it's hard for them to accept what it is that's happening. And by the way, what is happening now, it happens always. Our hours go by so quickly. We bumped up.
I know. We're getting into phone calls next hour already.
Well, we bumped up against the top of the hour, and I just wanted to mention this: the healing that was documented in this medicineless hospital in Beijing, China. The purpose, the only purpose that I chose to, for me, including that in this DVD, and for even talking about it, it's not for people to find out where that place is and go and get healed. That's not right. What it's all about. It's to demonstrate in a very potent, graphic, less than 3-minute format that we have the power within us if we learn to focus this heart-based experience. That we can affect physical change, and it happens really fast. It doesn't have to happen over, long periods of time. This woman's body responded in less than 3 minutes. Her cancer was gone.
See, I happen to think, Greg, that so many people, let's say, who listen to this program, are more enlightened than those people who don't. And I'm beginning to find, and we'll probably talk about it when we come back after the break, that more and more that people who aren't enlightened tend to be unhappier.
I think that's true, because they feel like victims of circumstances in our world. And what I want to say before the break about that healing, the bottom line to this language, to what's taught in the monasteries, to what the scientists are showing us, what's published in the journal Nature, there was an article published, the Weizmann Institute of Science, it's documented on our website, that the title of the article they published in the journal Nature says the whole thing: observation affects reality. The bottom line is that when we observe in our heart the feeling, or we create the feeling as if the outcome has already happened, as if the healing has already occurred or the peace has already occurred in our lives, that appears to be the language that this field recognizes. And it's then that it will mirror back in the quantum stuff that our reality is made of, what it is that we've just claimed in our hearts. And that's what our own science is showing us.
You're saying the field would recognize it, which makes it sound like it's got some intelligence behind it.
It's not a wish, and we're not asking, we're not saying, please let this thing happen, or I hope it happens, or dear God, please bring this to me right now. Those are other forms of prayer, and they're valid, and they work in certain respects. This is a very empowered form of meditation, of prayer, a way of being, depending on your orientation. The bottom line is, when we create in our hearts, we feel as if we already have the things, the object of our prayer, or the object of that desire, that healing, or that peace. That feeling translates into the electrical and magnetic fields that have a non-local effect that create local results.
When we come back, we will talk about the Global Coherence Project and what we can do to become part of it on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll open up the phone lines, give you an opportunity to talk with Greg Braden. Perhaps you might want to share your miracle stories with us as well. We'll have him analyze it. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Greg, let's now talk about this initiative called the Global Coherence Project. What is it?
Well, what I'd like to do is we'll talk about what it is, the bottom line, and then a little bit about why it works. And then if people want to find out more, and there's obviously much more we'll be able to do here tonight. The bottom line of this project is that recent discoveries in the way the human heart works, and this is why I wanted to talk about the heart first. We know that our heart is in communication with our brain in every moment of every day. And the quality, George, of that communication between our hearts and our brains is called coherence. So the higher the quality of the signal between the heart and the brain, the greater the coherence. So that is one area of research that now is documented. It's been published in mainstream journals. We know that this is happening. The new discovery, relatively new, is that there are layers of Earth's atmosphere, particularly in the ionosphere, that happen to resonate within the same range of frequencies as our communication between our heart and our brain. So in other words, when we are experiencing a high level of coherence between our heart and our brain, we're actually tuning ourselves to a layer of the ionosphere in Earth's atmosphere, and in that way, we are literally communicating with this living field of intelligence that that envelops our world, and it opens up the door to tremendous possibilities in terms of the Gaia theories about Earth being a living
entity, living thing, yeah,
and our relationship to it. So that's a little background on what's happening. What is so exciting about this project, the Global Coherence Project, is that a series of new discoveries have led to the development of devices, a series of devices that can now measure this coherence in the atmosphere and in the Earth, in the geomagnetic fields of the Earth and the atmosphere. So that's one piece of the project. The second piece is that an organization in Northern California, the Institute of Heart Math. I'm sure you've interviewed them on this program in the past, or maybe Art has. But the Institute of Heart Math is a pioneering research organization studying the power of the human heart in what we call heart-based intelligence. In other words, they know that the heart does much more than simply pump blood through our bodies. You can build a machine to do that.
Right.
But there's something much, much more happening. So the Institute of Heart Math was founded in 1991. The core group was made of doctors, engineers, designers, programmers, researchers from many different walks of life and universities coming together to explore the power of the human heart. And they've been doing it, very well documented in the Journal of American Medical Association and other journals since 1991. They now are teamed up with the physicist who has developed the sensors that will allow this measurement in the atmosphere of the Earth, and where HeartMath is bringing their technology to bear is that they have also designed the technology to tell us when we are most coherent, when that language between our heart and our brain is at its best, when it's optimized. So they are now training people through a number of different initiatives to know for certain. There's no guesswork here. It's not like people sit down at 12 noon and close their eyes and have a good feeling in their heart. They actually have the technology that will tell us when we are coherent between our heart and our brain, and the technology to be able to measure it directly in the atmosphere to know when that's happening and literally create a coherent field that we're all connected to in the Earth. And the value of doing this is that we know that when when we're connected with this coherence, it affects many different areas of our lives. We know that it affects changes in our nervous system, our emotional states, the way we perform in sports, memory. In high coherence, there are fewer traffic accidents, for example, fewer emergency hospital room visits.
Hmm.
For the first time, George, what we've been able to do is validate on an individual basis when that coherence exists.
And track it.
And the project is just coming online. They're building 3 sensors to triangulate and know precisely how this is working. And then the project over 2008 and into 2009 will build many of these sensors all over the Earth, being able to track this range. What we know is that the ionosphere, it creates what researchers call a symphony of frequencies, and those frequencies range from about 0.01 hertz to about 300 hertz. And when our heart and our brains are in coherence, we're on the lower end of that spectrum, around 0.01 and up from there, the lower end of that spectrum. When peace is happening in broad geographic areas is when we have the highest degrees of coherence in this level of the atmosphere. When healing is happening in a human body, like the ones we see on the DVD, it's when the person receiving the healing is having this level of coherence. In other words, is in tune around this 0.01 hertz. So the Institute of Heart Math is pioneering this initiative, and for full transparency, I'm saying I'm on the advisory board of this project, and I'm very excited about it. It's the first time, while very well-intentioned initiatives have happened in the past and have helped us to understand that collectively we do have the ability to influence what happens in our world, this is the first time that we've ever been able to validate on an individual basis. In other words, a person can hold in their hand a relatively inexpensive device that tells them through a feedback mechanism when they are in coherence with this level of the atmosphere. And what the studies are showing is that not only do we influence the atmosphere on these levels, but the atmosphere influences us as well.
Now, what are some of the things people, once they're in tune with this coherence, could do?
Well, it optimizes our experience, our abilities, performance abilities. They've documented sports, memory, ESP, things like that. Those are all enhanced. It optimizes our nervous system and the communication between our brain. Even if we're not part of the project, everyone benefits to some degree because we're all part of this field. Our emotional states, our sleep states. I know a lot of people right now are saying that they feel like there's a disruption in their sleep patterns, that they feel that time is speeding up, for example. It's not necessarily a negative thing, but they're feeling that. They're feeling that life is happening very fast, too fast to keep up with, too many things going on. They're always behind. These are all symptoms of this, the chaos that's being reflected in this layer of the atmosphere. And when this layer changes, we change, and when we change, the layer changes. So I'm just going to give an example of something that happened back in the 1980s.
In the 80s, all right.
Where early experiments, and I know we've talked about these, George, in this program before, and other listeners have probably heard of the early experiments with the TM people, transcendental meditation.
Yes.
The city effect, when certain numbers of people are gathered together and they're trained to feel peace in their bodies. And peace is then reflected beyond their bodies and mirrored in a broad geographic area. These were powerful studies because they showed beyond a shadow of a doubt that there's an effect. We never had any way to document precisely whether or not coherence was happening and how to optimize this effect. But in the Journal of Conflict Resolution, for example, in 1988, published the results of a very famous study where 200 people were trained to feel peace during the Israeli-Lebanese War, the first Israeli-Lebanese War in the early 1980s. They were stationed in the war-torn areas, and while they were feeling that peace in a broad geographic area, statistically, what was found was that the number of traffic accidents declined, emergency hospital room visits declined, terrorist activities stopped. They dropped to zero. They completely stopped. And when the people, these 200 practitioners, stopped what they were doing, all of these statistics reversed. And they did this time and time again to make sure it wasn't just a fluke. And one of the things of listeners,
that is amazing, Greg.
Well, it is. One of the things, now listeners may or may not be aware of this. You remember back in the late 1980s when there was a civilian airliner that was shot down over North Korea by the Soviet military. This was still during the Cold War. And there was so much tension, so much chaos happening emotionally. And what after the Cold War, we found out what was happening behind the scenes. Obviously, we didn't know during the war itself. What we found out from the Soviets who were talking about this this experience is they knew that they'd made a big mistake, obviously, when they shot down a civilian airliner. They believed that the United States would be so upset that we would launch an attack against them because we interpreted this civilian shoot down as an act of war. In that thinking, they believed that it would be prudent for them to preempt us and push the button. And all of this, I mean, the synchronicity couldn't be better. All of this was happening during a weekend when one of these experiments was happening, where many people were feeling peace in their hearts, trained to feel peace. And it was reaching, the whole scenario was reaching a crescendo when the peace experiment started. And although we can't prove it scientifically, what we know is that everyone backed off of the trigger and calmer heads prevailed. And of course, nobody knew this until after the Cold War, when the correlations were made and the Russians said, you know, we were going to push the button because we thought you were going to push the button.
Yep. Why is it, though, Greg, that you have to keep up with it? You have to keep at it in order for it to work. Why can't you just do it once and stop?
George, that is, I mean, you couldn't have asked a more perfect question, because that is the beauty of what these ancient traditions are saying to us. Our scientists, when we do these experiments, we are coming from the place where we believe it's something you do in a moment in time, and then you stop. And the mystery is why all the statistics reverse after you stop. And the ancient traditions tell us that what we're doing in these experiments, it's not something that we're supposed to do in a moment in time. It's a way that we were designed to be. We're invited in these ancient traditions to live to the best of our abilities in this place where we feel that peace in our hearts. And in that way, the effect never ends. It's perpetual. And even though maybe on some days you're feeling more peaceful than I am, or our listeners are having a good day or a bad day, because so many people are doing this, to some degree there's ups and downs, but that peace is perpetuated every day. So the old studies that were done during the 80s, the ones I just shared, they proved that there's an effect. They were never able to document scientifically that we were actually experiencing what is now defined as coherence between our heart and our brain. The new Global Coherence Project now has the ability not only to document on an individual basis when we have that coherent experience personally, but it will show us in the atmosphere when enough of us have reached the levels where we're affecting this field. And this is the same field that the leaders of the nations are tapped into when they're making their decisions. It's the same fields that
unfortunately, most of them don't use it the right way.
Well, but this is the thing. We're all plugged into it, George. There is no them and us from the perspective of this field. There's a we, and we're all plugged into the same field, some consciously, some not. And what the studies have shown, and this is the beauty of these projects, is that a relatively few number of people may learn to speak the language of peace or healing that this field recognizes for the whole to benefit. And this is what these studies during the 80s were showing. In a broad geographic area, entire communities benefited from what only 200 practitioners were doing in a localized area because the effects are non-local. And that's precisely what this is showing. So the purpose is to facilitate a better understanding of our relationship to the Earth, number one, and then to collaborate and effect to establish this global coherence at a time when decisions are being made from a place of confusion and chaos. When this coherence is in place, we think better. We make better decisions, and we make decisions based more in what's called heart intelligence rather than the mind. And I've seen this work in a corporate boardroom, George. Not everyone has to know what's happening for this kind of an effect to be reflected. I've been in a corporate boardroom in an aerospace corporation, largely surrounded by former military professionals who were conditioned to arrive at decisions through a lot of anger, a lot of velocity in their voice, a lot of fist pounding on the tables. And what I've seen is one or two people in a boardroom can change the way they approach a problem, and that whole room will change without ever saying a word and explaining what you're doing because they all pick it up in that field.
Why is it, Greg, though, that you need 200 people, you need 1,000 people to make the change? Why can't just one strong person do it?
I think one strong person could do it if there were a person among us who were tuned sufficiently and understood this principle sufficiently. We're even those who are trained, George, we are so conditioned to believe. I think our conditioning is so strong that we are separate from everything else, that we are powerless beings in this world. Unless we're a master or an avatar, I think the conditioning is that. I'm just going to go back to the healing in the medicineless hospital. That's a beautiful example. There were three practitioners, excuse me, that facilitated that healing. And I asked the man who filmed this, and I know him, I studied with him, his name is Luke Chin, he's a Qigong practitioner, beautiful man, and they gave me permission to share this with our audiences. I asked Luke, I said, could that woman have healed herself without those practitioners? In other words, if this is so powerful, why did she need them to help her? And I think that's the same question you're asking me. And he smiled when I asked the question, and he said, you know, Greg, he said, it's interesting. We seem to feel more empowered when we're surrounded by people who believe as we do. That seems to give us permission to blossom in our own personal power. And I think the answer that he gave me that day is also the answer to what we're understanding about our power to bring about peace in our communities and healing in our bodies. It's the same field, peace and healing. It's the same field. And while to some people it sounds like wishful thinking, I mean, you look at what happened with the Berlin Wall. That is a beautiful example of where a shift in consciousness happened in a relatively, there was a big ramp-up time. But once that shift, a certain number of people began to think and feel in a certain way, the conditions changed very, very quickly. And
Greg,
that's where we are right now.
Can evil be used the same way?
That's a beautiful question, and I'm going to give you I've asked the same question, and it's a powerful answer, and I'm going to try to get this in before our break at the top of the hour.
And if not, we'll just pick it back up.
This is the beauty of the way this field appears to work, George. The field is what is called a neutral, unbiased field. What that means is it reflects what the user gives it to work with. However, the user will experience the effects of what they put into the field before that field ever responds. So love, compassion, understanding, forgiveness, peace are self-perpetuating, expansive experiences. So those that feel those first, they benefit from that self-perpetuating, expansive, life-affirming experience, and it goes into the field. Those who are sending fear, anger, hate, jealousy, rage, death into that field, those are contracting, self-limiting experiences, and they experience those in their bodies before they have much effect in that field at all. And in that way, it's almost like nature's fail-safe.
All right, stay with us. Now, your phone calls and possibly your miracle stories next on Coast to Coast AM.